Next, we'll hear from one of the few U.S. senators not running for president. Ted Stevens has fiercely represented Alaska for almost four decades.
I'm an old trial lawyer. I know how to use my temper. I believe that you must make a point and hang on to it to win. I don't want to sit back and sort of be meek about it, and I guess I've rubbed some people the wrong way.
At age 83, Ted Stevens is our latest guest on The Long View, our conversations with people of long experience. When Republicans controlled Congress, Stevens was among the most powerful. Today, he takes two political positions that can seem to clash. He favors oil drilling in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. He also sponsored legislation to improve fuel economy in cars. To understand why, you can start with the state that Ted Stevens has called home since getting a job offer in the 1950s.
My wife and I decided we'd just take it and go. And we went up to Fairbanks. We left Washington in December and got to Fairbanks sometime in mid-January.
You arrived in Fairbanks, Alaska in mid-January?
Yes, we did.
That's jumping right in.
It was.
Had you ever been to Alaska before?
No, but I envisioned that it was sort of like China, and I served in China in World War II, and I've always wanted to go, so when we had the offer, it didn't take long to accept.
We should mention you flew American warplanes in China in World War II.
Yes, I was of the 14th Air Force and flew under Chenault in China in World War II.
General Claire Chenault. Do you mean that it seemed like China in that it was a remote and rather romantic place?
It was, well, I don't know about the romantic part, but it was remote and few people out there in the area of the interior of Alaska at that time. I think Fairbanks was about 25,000 people when we got there.
And I want to ask about one way that Alaska has changed over the years. Senator, you've been speaking out more and more about climate change. Are there ways in which Alaska is noticeably different now when you come home from Washington, D.C. and look around?
One of the effects is that the storms are greater, it seems. So there was a typhoon off the northwest coast up into the Arctic Ocean that few people heard about. But that raised havoc along the west coast and the Arctic coast in Alaska. But we see the trees are growing a little further north and the permafrost a little thinner. We see the effects of change. And we have International Arctic Research Commission has been studying this now for years. Those arguments just go over our heads because we see the results. We want to deal with the results now and let other people argue about the causes. We can't have much impact on the causes. The causes, if there are causes, are caused in Chicago and New York and not caused by our small population in Alaska.
Does that explain how you ended up sponsoring legislation to improve fuel economy standards for cars across the United States?
Yeah, I think if they want to shut down our Arctic, but these are people that take the position that it is man-made. If they're right, then they ought to do something about it where the cause is coming from, not to try to shut down the area which is not any part of the cause, but it is trying to just live through the change that's taking place.
Explain this, because some people will see a contradiction here, and I want to hear how you work it out in your own mind. Some people will say, look, I'm very worried about global warming. Look at the things that are happening in Alaska, for example, but you could point to a lot of other places, and I think that oil and gas should just stay in the ground.
Well, that oil and gas doesn't have anything to do with global warming. How do you make the connection between producing oil in Alaska and global warming? That global warming comes from the millions of automobiles that are burning the oil. But if you don't get it from Alaska, you're going to get it offshore. The idea of closing Arctic and dealing with this, and I've heard that connection to ad nauseum from a lot of people, and they're wrong. We're not causing any real climactic change by producing oil and gas from beneath the ground in Alaska. We're sending it down to what we call the South 48. We consume very little of it. In Alaska, we just don't have roads. We've only got one series of roads in Alaska that connect Anchorage to Fairbanks to Canada. But that's basically it.
You're saying if it didn't come from Alaska, it'd come from someplace and get burned.
I say it since it didn't come from Alaska, it is coming from someplace on an increasing amount every year. And that costs us more and more. Even when we fill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, what do? We go offshore and buy oil upon it in the ground just in case someone embargoes us and we have to have emergency supplies.
Senator, I want to ask a little bit about your long career in the Senate. Your Congressional Quarterly profile quotes you, says that you once described yourself as, quote, a mean, miserable SOB. What makes you miserable?
Well, I just get disturbed over delay and over people posturing and really trying to sound like they're approaching an issue from the point of view of facts and what's right, and what they're really doing is making a political statement. I get miserable when I run into people who just want to do politics every day of their lives, and there are many of them here now, many more here now than when I came. When I came here to the Senate, we prided ourselves on being equal on the floor and being totally friends. The new Senate doesn't take time to do that. The day after election, the next election starts. We're spending our time right now on posturing on 08 rather than dealing with the issues that we should be dealing with today on a bipartisan basis. Oh, there's some people who talk about bipartisanship, but what they're really saying is they want our minority, which after all, this is a 50-49 Senate right now, our minority to agree with what the 50 want to do. Now, that's not bipartisanship. Bipartisanship is sitting down and trying to work out and deciding what is fair and where there is a consensus and where there's a reasonable, fair, and honest compromise available.
And I wonder if you're touching on another concern that you have there. Are you saying that there are more and more instances where one side or the other will argue that their opponents are not just wrong, but morally wrong and morally repugnant?
Well, now you bring in the whole subject of hate. I don't remember hate being so strong in the Senate ever before than it is right now. When I got here, we had 50 to 60 votes a year. Now we have 50 to 60 votes a month. But those are posturing votes. They're votes to try and catch the other side off places or to try to make someone vote against what their constituents want them to vote. It's very political.
Has your party been as guilty as the Democrats on that score?
Partially. I think gradually both sides have become this way. One party loses seats because the other wins. The other, it's hyper-political pretty soon. Then that party is on top, and they get more political because they don't want the change to occur again.
Do you still have any friends on the Democratic side?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. I think Dan Inouye's the best friend I have in the world.
Hawaiian senator.
Yes.
What about Robert Byrd?
Senator Byrd's a good friend, but he's gotten a little testy with me as he gets a little older. I don't blame him.
Forgive me for laughing. Yeah. Why don't you blame him for getting more testy?
Well, I think as you get a little older, you get a little more impatient about things, and he gets impatient about things.
And do you get impatient about things?
I do, but the trouble is that when I do it, it's viewed in a different way. It's the old Hulk getting mad again.
When he says the old Hulk, Stevens is referring to himself. He used to wear a tie with a picture of the Incredible Hulk when debating in the U.S. Senate. And that's the long view from Senator Ted Stevens. You can hear more conversations in this series at npr.org.